The president shocks the world and pulls out of the Paris climate agreement.
ISIS takes responsibility for the three most recent European attacks.
And comedians getting political. Are folks like Kathy Griffin and Bill Maher protected by the First Amendment?
Our reactions and more next. It's Tuesday. It's June 6th. Welcome to Political Culture.
You're tuned into Black Hollywood Live, Political Culture.
Hey guys, welcome. It is our first show of June. So
yes,
welcome to the show. I had to think about that too. I was like, what day is it? Welcome to the show. Happy Pride Month. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. Chelsea, how you doing?
Great.
Yeah.
Welcome back.
Thanks.
From your trip that you just got back from like 45 minutes ago?
Yeah, I got off a plane at Burbank Airport and rushed down the street to the studio. And so I'm here now. So sorry if I look really tired on the show. But you can follow me on Twitter at Drexel Hurd.
Maybe you should change your name to Delirious Drex.
I was on the plane and this guy was sitting next to me. He's a very nice guy. And I was trying to sleep. And the flight from Las Vegas to Burbank is 45 minutes. Or Burbank to LAX, whatever, is 45 minutes. And I just needed like a shut eye. You know when you need a quick nap and nobody's giving it to you? And so you're like, please, please, please.
So
be
you
quiet.
Came to the perfect place.
Yeah.
The studio.
Yeah, studio.
With
which
bright
I have to
lights.
Do, right. And I got to do this show. And then we're on Trump vs. Hillary right after this. Where can they find you on Twitter?
At Chelsea Galicia.
And be sure to follow AfterBuzz TV at AfterBuzz TV. And follow our show at ABTV Polyculture. Because there's lots of ways that you can get into this conversation other than leaving the comments below. But definitely leave a lot of comments below because we want those to be a part of the show as well. Just a couple of things that happened last week or within the past few days. The Trump administration proposed privatizing the FAA.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit. I noticed that in the budget. And I'm a little like, where is this coming from? Because I know that it's, you know, privatization is a big Republican push, but I don't know where the emphasis on the FAA is coming from with Trump. You have any idea?
I have no idea, which it doesn't. I mean, I didn't get a chance to read through
his. Well, maybe this is just occurring to me. He's used to flying privately or flying a lot, and he probably thinks it's slow and that he could make it better. Maybe he could allow himself some advantages.
I said he would have only done
a private company under his thumb running it.
But it wouldn't even make much of a difference because there are so many rules and regulations regarding flying.
But I don't think he knows or he cares. He thinks if he takes it out of the government, he can have it follow whatever rules he wants it to.
Well, that's not surprising. But I also said, I mean, right before the show, we were like, well, what about this air traffic control thing? I said, is Trump profiting off of this somehow? Would he strike a deal enough to where he benefits off of this?
I mean, my initial reaction is to say, well, but the company that he wants to set up to run it would be a not profit. But just because you're a not profit doesn't mean that somebody's not making a ton of money. Up until like a year or so ago, the NFL was a kind of a nonprofit. And we know people in the NFL, players and coaches and all, people were making a lot of money off of this nonprofit.
But so, you know, a lot of those players, and they're all a part of a union. And
so the point being that there is a way for people to make a lot of money off of, quote, nonprofits.
Well, this
or actual real, you don't even need the my quotes, actual nonprofits can be high money makers.
Yeah, this is a part of the president's $1 trillion infrastructure plan. And according to the president, I'm looking at Wired.com, it says flights are delayed and flying sucks. And the best way to change it is to take responsibility for managing airspace away from the bureaucrats at the Federal Aviation Administration and hand it over to a private nonprofit organization. I don't understand why the private nonprofit organizations who would generally have an idea about how businesses run not work with the FAA or put somebody in charge of the FAA. Who is a business person who you would, you know.
But here's my concern. The FAA is charged with safety, not profit, and even is not charged first and foremost with being a very efficient agency. I'm yes, the delays and stuff are obnoxious, But I would like the FAA to first and foremost be concerned with safety.
Right.
And that if an airplane is not passing safety checks, that it's going to cancel that flight rather than push through because we need to keep things moving and on schedule. So I don't really know where the breakdown is in why, you know, flights get delayed and the whole thing. If it's really because it's run inefficiently, sure, bring in consultants to help clean it up.
Right.
But if it's because there are real problems with aircraft and, you know, things happen that we need to slow down a bit and not just go a mile a minute or even 500 miles an hour, as planes generally fly at.
That flight that I just had was so fast.
It's just there are some areas like healthcare that profit and supreme efficiency isn't the name of the game. It's safety and service
right.
for whatever the purpose of that agency is.
Because once you do something quick, that's when things start to fall apart. Just back at the Wired real quick, it says that not surprising, the administration has not offered a lot of details on how this might work, but promises the change would not increase costs or decrease safety. The FAA goes back to what you said about nonprofit. The FAA would oversee a new nonprofit entity.
So now we've got two organizations, and people are worried about reducing bureaucracy. That doesn't sound like the way to reduce it.
But it would
be
funded through user fees at like takeoff and landing charges instead of the excise taxes on passenger tickets. So basically, they're changing the word taxes to fees because it's the same thing.
Oh.
You're gonna charge me fees anyway.
But it's going to be called something else.
It's going to be called something else. And I don't want to spend a lot of time on this.
So then he gets to say that he's reduced
taxes. But then you see a fee later on. So I'm sure we'll hear more about this once we get to the president's non-plan over the next few months.
Of all the things going on in the world, I just don't see how that one fits in to even his priorities.
And it certainly does not. Not only his priorities, but the priorities of the people that voted for him. I don't think anybody was sitting in flyover states, sitting there being like, you know what? Can you go out there? I'm just having trouble getting on this plane.
And my understanding is that if we do have a nonprofit takeover, one of the concerns is that it will hurt smaller airports in said flyover states.
Burbank Airport.
So
And flyover states as well, yeah. I don't know.
So something here, I don't want to be like a crazy conspiracy person, but there's something here that must be going on underneath what we're saying because this doesn't pass the smell test.
Like the fees won't go to what they say they're going to and they'll end up going to pay for some Trump-funded wall?
Okay, maybe.
That's probably what's going to happen. In other news, despite a rough 100 days, the president met with Republican leaders again today to discuss what? Healthcare and taxes.
How'd that go?
I mean, they looked jovial.
Who said they looked jovial?
I mean, I saw
Who
the photo.
Who uses that word?
I saw the photo.
You do?
Okay. I did. Jovial is a good word. They looked happy. At least Paul Ryan was smiling, or he was at least pretending to.
I can imagine that if you're not, like, after the Pope picture, if you are caught in a picture with Trump and you're not smiling, he may call your ass up and be, listen, you don't look very happy. You need to be very excited to be honored to be in a photograph with me.
You saw all those pictures of Melania after she slapped that hand away. She just looked happy after that. I don't know. I mean, she turned the light.
Okay, so this was with House?
It was House and Senate Republicans. So
talking about healthcare.
Talking about something that's dead in the water. And then talking about taxes, which we talked about the president's budget last week.
So we don't know really what they talked about. We were told.
It's just that they
Maybe my like cynicism cap is on, but I really doubt that they spoke about health care and taxes. So
I bet they really sat in that room and came up with a strategy about James Comey's testimony on Thursday. What do we do, Mr. President? Tell us what you need us to go out there and say.
Okay. That I would believe over that they got together to talk about health care and taxes.
Yeah. It was a smokescreen.
Yep.
And the president's approval ratings, according to Real Clear Politics, is down to 39%, with 54% disapproving. So things are not looking good in the first 200 days. Because, according to the polls, America is not pleased with Trump pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement.
Yeah.
Trump went to the Rose Garden the other day and said, as president, I can no longer put the consideration before the well-being of American – I can put no other consideration before the well-being of American citizens. The Paris Climate Accord is simply the latest example of Washington entering into an agreement that disadvantages the United States to the exclusive benefit of other countries.
So this makes me wonder – did he read the thing?
Well, if it wasn't on one page, and you pulled it up, if it's not one page...
It is 25 pages
long. Well, that's too many.
And I think that a middle school student could read it. I mean, it's made available in several languages. The English one is pretty straightforward. And I've seen a lot of videos from, you know, White House Republicans saying that it would cause this or it would cost this. And there aren't any defined numbers in the agreement except for the goal of reduction of a 2 degree Celsius increase. And the only other number that I remember seeing in there was that they were going to come back and rediscuss how they were doing every 5 years.
Right. I believe the contract and the White House put out, was showing Chelsea right before the show, the White House put out a YouTube video of why they felt they needed to pull out of the agreement. I mean, it was a, you know, standard White
House slideshow.
It was like slideshow, whatever.
Undermines competition.
Yep.
But that doesn't make any sense.
Right. Because if you saw the response after, all the U.S. companies were like, why would you do this?
Well, that's an interesting thing that you say that, because there are actually more than 1,400 institutions. That includes Fortune 500 companies, universities, individuals that have signed this statement. This has been dubbed the We Are Still In pledge,
right,
to commit to what the agreement requests of all countries. And it's like a request. It's like a let's get on the same page about this, much more than any you must meet this, that, or any other criteria. I get this, the argument that it's kind of weak because it
from
doesn't
Nicaragua.
Have yes
from the one country, from the one of the three countries including the United States.
Right. So Syria declined to sign. Nicaragua has declined to sign. Nicaragua's stated reason is because it doesn't go far enough.
Syria clearly has a good reason because they've got a bajillion other things they got to worry about. They've got a country falling apart, you know, and it literally. And then you got the United States. Even Russia signed on.
If it was true that it doesn't go far enough, then that's all Trump needed to say. But we know that the reason he didn't sign it is or didn't agree to stay in is because he has some, in my mind, completely made up reasons why it hurts the United States.
No. I think that the reason that he wanted to pull out of that agreement, because not only did he pull out of the agreement, but he said that he would work with the leaders to renegotiate the deal, and all the leaders have since said we're not renegotiating anything. It has nothing to do with what he said in that Rose Garden. It has everything to do with being like, we're going to take down everything Barack Obama did over the past 8 years.
I said something similar last week on the Trump Report when we were guessing as to what was going to happen. And my guess, I think I may have been half right and half wrong, because if I remember correctly, I said, I don't think he's going to straight back out. He is going to want to renegotiate. So turns out that he wants to renegotiate, but he also backed out in the meantime. So I get a passing or a failing grade on that one. But the reason why, and I suggested that, is because he wants his thumbprints on it.
He wants a win somewhere, and he's not getting a win anywhere. Even today, yesterday when he signed that FAA memo, it was a memo. He had a whole ceremony giving pins out to make it look like he was signing legislation.
Oh, interesting.
And he was signing a memo, but he was who does that?
I didn't know that had gone down.
Oh, yeah. It went down just like that because he needed a photo opportunity. And the photo opportunity was, look at me. I'm signing a memo. And going through the motions of what you would normally do when you sign big legislation. Everybody got a pen, including Ted Cruz.
Oh, isn't that funny? Guy.
Yeah, I bet he was like, "Oh, what am I? Why? What is this memo for? Wow. I don't care." Yeah. So another thing that happened during his speech was he said, "I was elected by the people of Pittsburgh, not the people of Paris."
Actually, which the mayor was like,
"Yeah." Well, two things about that. It's like two things in that whole thing. You're like, "Well, that doesn't even make any sense." First of all, you weren't elected by the people of Paris because the people of Paris voted overwhelmingly for Hillary Clinton. And then Paris has nothing to do with the Paris
It's just the
agreement.
Location.
Yeah, he doesn't understand that.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I thought it was great that, was it the mayor of Pittsburgh that came out to say, well, actually the fact is that 80% of our citizens in Pittsburgh voted for Hillary Clinton,
right.
So they actually didn't vote
right.
for you.
And he said that Pittsburgh will join other cities, uh-huh. Including Los Angeles, New York, a lot of the big cities, to contribute to that. Which,
in fact, I do have the numbers on that.
Yeah,
a dozen states that that are put together the world's third largest economy, because that includes California, New York, Washington. And more than 200 cities had also committed to the Paris Accord.
So then my question is, do you think that this was the plan all along to get the federal government out of the
I think there are some libertarians who may be excited by the, or maybe even some moderate Republicans who want less or no federal government.
Right.
That if the states want to do something, if the cities want to do something, let them do it. But the command should not come from the top down.
But I would think they would go hand in hand. The position of the United States is to help their cities.
That's the idea of people who believe in a federal government. But there are people who believe that the closer we can get to having no federal government, the better it
right.
is for this country.
So that's what I'm saying. Do you think that this is the underlying reason why to push the cities and the states to make their own decisions, and that's what they knew was going to happen all along?
I don't know if they thought that was what was going to happen all along, but now it's a bit backfired, because if this is what the cities and the states want to do, it's almost more powerful than the federal government.
I'm actually just surprised. I think I bring that up because I'm just surprised that if I was the White House, that's exactly how I would have spun it. I would have said, if the states and our cities want to do that, then we will support their decisions to do that, because states have rights and it is up to them. If that's all the White House had
maybe
to say.
Maybe if Mike Pence were president,
he would
maybe
have said
that's
that.
What he would have
that
said.
That would have been the statement.
And it actually would be somewhat valid.
It would fall right in line with everything that Republicans have been saying about states' rights and states' responsibility and states making their own choices for their cities. Blah, 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 and that's all the White House had to say. If they wanted to win the week on that, Trump would have come out there not talking about companies, but talking about the reasons why the federal government would not be in that. Then, yeah. But when you've got 192 other countries a part of it, that argument kind of doesn't really hold up, because it's going to be 192 countries plus 200 other American cities, but not the United States as a whole.
Yeah.
And not the federal government.
It's caused some big names like Elon Musk and from Tesla and Bob Iger from Disney to bow out of participating on the president's councils.
Yep. Economic Council is Trump's Economic Council. Emmanuel Macron, we're about to throw up his tweet. He put out a tweet immediately that said, make the planet great again.
Yeah.
It was very funny. This Macron guy, he's quick. His government is...
I think he's competing with Justin Trudeau for the most charming
leader. Well, but I also think that if you remember when President Obama took over, how fast and how digitalized that White House was right out the gate, and how their rapid response team was so fast. I mean, you've got this tweet that came out. He did a response in English.
I loved it.
To the American people.
I don't mean to degrade him, but reducing him to an accent.
Could you imagine him? I mean, I know we talked about him and Justin Trudeau and him meeting last week. Could you imagine them talking French to each other?
Oh.
Yeah, we're on a whole different show. But you know, so he did that, and then we talked about the White House's response on YouTube. France actually took that whole thing.
their video.
Their video, and then edited it using their video, and then was like, nope, that's wrong, and here's the reasons why, and here's what you actually should have said, and reasons why you're wrong, White House. You know, this, I think France, I think it's interesting because Emmanuel Macron is doing what Justin Trudeau should have done. He's like surpassing him in the first few weeks as somebody that people are looking to. I think his relationship with, I think Angela Merkel is going to look to him like she looked to Barack Obama. Justin Trudeau, she might see as a little bit younger. And Emmanuel Macron seems to have it all kind of together right now. So, but
a cute little romance among them. But here's my thing about this Paris Agreement. I get people are like, okay, this is too expensive. First of all, I don't know where you got all these numbers because there were no numbers in the agreement and there was no strict requirements. People complained it didn't have any teeth. So it occurs to me that if you don't like this because it doesn't have enough teeth to it, that it's a little like you don't believe in marriage because there's no teeth in the marriage agreement. You agree to marry somebody, right. You get married. There are no punishments, really. There's no consequences if you are a bad spouse. There are really no consequences if you get out of the marriage. There's a marriage is just like we are on the same page about what we are trying to do.
It's a partnership.
Here. Right. And that is what the Paris Agreement was, because it was significant that 100 plus, nearly 200 countries were agreeing to get on the same page about anything.
Right.
Is pretty remarkable that they all undertake the responsibility and their part in contributing to climate change, and that they're trying to be proactive. They're trying, well, proactive at this stage in the game may be a little too late to use the word proactive, but that each country was supposed to come up with a plan, share it with the group, you know, transparency, it didn't have anything in there that, you know, it had to cost this many jobs or it has to cost this many dollars. And even if we do it, it's only going to reduce the climate change by 0.004 degrees or something like that. But you can't even say that because in the agreement it says we're going to come back and revisit every 5 years. So it doesn't have anything set in stone. So I don't understand these videos claiming to have specific numbers about what it's going to cost in terms of dollars and what it's going to cost us in terms of jobs.
Well, but you have to think about how this White House spends stuff for their supporters.
I saw it from private videos of sources that I don't even want to say because I don't even want to give them. But I did. I wanted to look around and see what are the reasons that people are giving. And one of the main reasons that I saw that people were giving against the agreement was that it cost too much money and made too little difference.
Yeah, I think the argument was the United States was putting in, you know, X amount of money.
But it doesn't say that.
But
and if it does, if it's requesting of that amount of money.
Right. And I believe that instead of pulling out the agreement, Donald Trump should have reduced the amount of money. If he was truly concerned about the cost, instead of pulling out the agreement on principle, you reduce the amount of money that the United States is contributing that Barack Obama had agreed to. It wasn't like, I mean, Barack Obama agreed to something like 13...
$3 billion.
Yeah, something, you know.
Is lower GDP, by GDP, if you compare to the other countries that are part of the agreement.
So if he was truly concerned about that, yeah, reduce it to $1 billion and then renegotiate and then figure out how much money you want to, you know, down the line. But don't, on principle, pull out. And
it also even says that you can pull out, like, in a year.
Right. But it also takes you 4 years to do it.
I don't remember reading that part about that it takes 4 years, but that you are allowed to. But it's just if this was true, that this cost too much and made not enough of a difference, I would have liked to hear his alternative plan. We're not going to stick by this one. We're going to do even better.
So you're assuming that the Trump administration has plans. And we just read that they rolled out an FAA initiative and they don't have any plans for that.
I know. That's a little like expecting that after so many years of complaining about the Affordable Care Act that they would actually have something lined up and ready as soon as they had the opportunity.
And I feel like another reason why I think that he felt compelled to pull out of this agreement was because he didn't pull out of the Iran agreement. like he said he was going to. And so he needed an international pull to say, well, I talked about it on the trail. I said I was going to do it. Well, I didn't pull out of the Iran deal, but I'll pull out of the one deal that might not make as much of a hate, like a stink when it comes to domestic policy in the United States, at least from the Trump administration plan. But at least Iran policy would have significant effects on foreign policy. And that's not something that he really wanted to get tangled up in. But he could. Paris Agreement, he just didn't think was something
that I think that it's worth your time to read this, really. Paris, it's like 25
Paris
pages
Agreement.
Of, and you don't have to like get really deep into each word, but it is so benign that all this case about it's going to be so costly, it's going to lose us jobs, and we're going to be not competitive, is like, what document are they reading? And it is just completely pulled out of somewhere. Well,
again, that's what I said. I think it had less to do with what was in the document, had less to do with the principle, had everything to do with Barack Obama.
And there was something else that I saw about this that irked me, because you know me, how I hate corporate takeover feel of our... So there are a number of companies whose CEOs publicly came out in support of the Paris Agreement and who publicly stated, "We are disappointed. I am disappointed in the president. Leaders stay at the table. Leaders don't leave." Da da da. And then it turns out that said CEOs, including the one from Dow Chemical and Corning Inc., are actually funding a lobby group that publicly denounced the Paris Agreement and pushed for our exit from it.
What do you think about that?
So that was because Dow Chemical and Corning and others are part of the Industrial Energy Consumers of America. It's a trade group. It includes like the Coke industries, the Coke brothers.
Which I would think that the Coke industries would benefit more in terms of growth when it comes to clean energy. When it comes to pushing climate, that just seems like something. I know they're libertarians, the Koch brothers, and so their idea of the federal government getting into anything is, you know, something they don't really believe in. But I think that as a business, they would benefit.
I'm not sure that they care all that much. When you're worth about like $50 billion each brother, I don't know if they're so much concerned with growth, just like they're keeping what
people
they have.
In that, I feel like people in that position are always care about what's next and how I can make the next dollar. Like, even if you're worth something, like, what can I latch on to next? I mean, if
I would have to agree with that. I guess on a personal level, I just cannot understand. You've got $50 billion and you have to keep finding ways to hurts other people in order so you can take more.
I just want $50. So if you got it, just give it to me. so what it means, what I was saying earlier, is that China is going to come out as the world leader on this. The United Kingdom, Paris, Vladimir Putin might stick his little neck out there and say, you know, he might be like, I'm going to maybe help some folks out. Maybe,
you know,
just kind of get in good graces.
I like that other countries are going to take pride in being out front on this.
Right.
And I don't think that makes me any less patriotic than somebody who runs around.
But I
with
also
the flag.
But I mean, you're talking about, like I said, the polls show that a majority of Americans disagree with the president's decision on pulling out of the climate agreement. So a majority of Americans, and I think that's why, if you look at Macron's statement when he first came out to talk about what his reaction was, he specifically pointed to the United States federal government. I mean, you know, when you write remarks, especially like that, you're very pointed about what you say because you have to be very careful. And he specifically said the United States federal government instead of the United States of America, which did not put the blame on the American people, but the United States federal government as run by Donald Trump.
Yeah, I think because of social media, we have an opportunity to show there's sort of two faces of America. There's the American public, and then there's the White House. And I think that the rest of the world probably, maybe, hopefully, likes the American public better than they like the White House, although I'm sure that they have plenty of reasons to not appreciate the American public. But, yeah, we do have an opportunity to not all be sort of labeled under what the president does because so many of us have spoken out in a voice different from what the White House is pushing. And so yeah. that is a saving grace. And I don't, where do you think he got this line? The rest of the countries in the world were laughing at us when the agreement was signed because they knew that they had put America at a disadvantage. I don't even understand
where he goes does
for
not
this
realize,
fantasy land.
He doesn't realize that people are laughing at us now, and he wants to push the blame off of somebody else at a different time, in a different era, in a different presidency.
Fact that anybody is really laughing, I mean, the climate change is a, if you just let yourself think about it, is a really freaking scary thing.
Right.
I don't think other countries have time or the will to laugh at any other countries. I think they're really trying to get something done.
But if you also look at it, solar energy, clean energy, this is what these countries are moving towards anyway. And in terms of profit, in terms of not only how to keep costs low, but to how to create jobs for their people. And instead of the United States taking that model on, at least this is what Barack Obama wanted to do, like a million solar
right.
panels
and
across the country or whatever.
Trump supports the Dakota Access Pipeline and the Keystone.
It's a different kind of
those
jobs.
Those are to keep the same old thing going.
Right.
And if money has been put in that direction, now there is an incentive for us to push off alternative energies because people want their investment back on those pipelines.
Right.
So I think that that may be part of it. Like whoever has gotten Trump to support these pipelines is also the one in his ear saying, no, give us time. We need to make our money back on the investment in these pipelines. We can go green in 50 years after we get our money out
well,
of this
deal.
Well,
you know, deal. You know who, as you were saying that, you know who I thought, like, who immediately popped into my head was Rex Tillerson. It was like why he would be pushing, you know, for this coming from Exxon. However, he has been surprising. It's just statements. Even over or yesterday, we found out that Donald Trump changed a line in his when he was at the G7 and the NSA and Tillerson and McMaster the Secretary of Defense Mattis all vetted this speech that he was giving, and he deleted the line himself. Donald Trump deleted the line himself. So. That NSA had cleared. So I think it was about Article 5, and it was about the United States.
An attack on one country
is an attack
on
us all. Mm-hmm. But other statements that Rick or other, New York Times comes out with an article about, behind the scenes or whatever. And you're like, Rex Tillerson is really trying to be. He is suited to be Secretary of State for somebody like Mike Pence. Or a Paul Ryan or a Mitt Romney or some Republican business person who gets it, but not this president because he has truly surprised me.
I mean, I think ultimately that may be what can't get my words in the right order today. Maybe what takes him down, not an impeachment, but because
the people around him.
He will crumble from the inside out. Yeah. I don't think he is used to having other people,
dissenters.
Like a board of people that he must consult with and who are responsible for their own areas. I imagine that in his business, he's a micromanager? Thank you.
Yeah.
That he's on top of every last aspect in a business. But in a business like his, there's less going on than when you're running a country. And he's starting to have problems
with
many
inside.
Of his inside, including Jeff Sessions.
It's funny you said that because there's a breaking news that New York Times just posted an article or something like that that said Jeff Sessions had offered to resign during the swirl of stuff that was happening. So I feel like once Jeff Sessions resigns, that's going to be tough.
So
be tough
I don't know why it just is coming to light now, but apparently Trump has been pissed off at Sessions because Sessions decided to recuse himself from anything related to the Russia probe.
Because he can't protect him.
Right. And so Sessions had to either recuse himself or completely resign, and he decided to recuse himself.
Yeah.
It is the only reasonable thing, which
that
makes
Jeff
me
Sessions
think...
has ever done.
Perhaps. I don't disagree with that at all. And then now Trump is mad at him
But he's also mad at the DOJ for not pushing travel ban over the, like as hard as he thought
right.
it was.
Well, and you're like, right. And Sessions is the head of the DOJ. Yeah. He is pissed. Trump is pissed that the DOJ pulled the first travel ban and went with the second one, which Trump calls politically correct and basically weak.
But he is the one that approved it. That's the crazy thing about this whole thing. He signed it.
Yeah.
He approved it. If the buck is going to stop with somebody at the end of the day,
you think the oh my
god. No, but I'm saying like if for somebody like him who's a micro going back to what he said, he's a businessman, he's a micromanager, he's not used to people making like a panel making decisions for him. If he wants to project a persona of or continue to project a persona of I've got this or the buck stops with me, which I think he said before, then he can't blame. Then he's doing a crappy job, and his comms team and everybody's doing a crappy job of placing the blame on other people, which he's very good at doing.
Well, yeah, I mean, Trump has placed the blame on Sessions for recusing himself, and then for the travel ban,
right.
And
it's ironic because Trump tweets all the time about how Democrats blame their election loss on Russia, and you're like. Well, Democrats have talked about ways that they can talk two things at one time. You know, there are obviously a lot of problems, but at the same time, we got this big cloud that
right.
that had a thing over it. But before we move on from Paris, I just want to talk about. So basically, what happens is that if the United States pulls out or any country that pulls out, it takes 4 years for them to pull out. So by the time the president is up for re-election, the next president can do because I was
I must
talking,
have missed that
yeah,
in my skin.
I was listening to Pod Saves America.
Uh-huh.
And they had one of the I can't remember who it was, one of the guys who crafted the agreement. And he said that the Paris Climate Agreement was signed November fourth or second, 2016.
15?
Signed, like completely signed okay. last, like, I'm sorry, completely in effect last year.
Right.
And 4 years from now, on November 4th, 2020, or November 2nd, 2020, is when you could pull out, when you could start to pull out from the agreement. And by that point, a new president will have been elected, president-elect. And I think that whoever that is going to be, because I don't think that Donald Trump will make a second term, will just reinitiate the United States commitment to the Paris Climate Agreement. So I think that is where we're headed. But now we're going to head to London. And in another part of Europe, as Donald Trump probably thinks Paris is not in Europe, but he thinks. Anyway, London had a couple of attacks this week.
It's so sad
not this
that
week, in the past 3 weeks.
It's so nonchalant that I mean it's occurring so often.
It's a little bizarre that the United States that all the focus is on London, to somebody who does not – like to somebody like Donald Trump, you look at London and you think London has a huge Muslim population. So you automatically assume that Muslims in London are creating this problem. And while the attackers have been Syrian and ISIL related – I don't think that they have anything to do with Muslims in London. So, but from that, if Donald Trump was trying to make that argument, that's all he would probably point to. But in Manchester, at the Manchester Arena a couple weeks ago, as everybody knows, Ariana Grande's concert, 23 people were killed, including the attacker, 119 injured, and 23 were left at that time in critical condition. And then yesterday, I'm watching the news and I'm like, what's happening in London? I'm getting a little breaking news. It was on the London Bridge. Three terrorists in a van mowed people down, and they started stabbing people. Killed seven people. 48 people were injured. And then today, we're like, what's happening in Notre Dame? I woke up. I was like, well, let me turn on the news. And then a man with a hammer bashed a police officer in the head. A lot going on in London and Paris. The guy in Notre Dame said this is for Syria. I'm not entirely sure why. Maybe he felt that. And I know that in conversations that I've had with people. Syrians, Iraqis, Egyptians, they all blame the United States, obviously, for the destruction of their countries in general. So, and not only the United States, but the United Kingdom and any of the allies that have contributed to that destruction. So I would think this is for Syria meant this is for destroying the country that we, you know, and that is a sad way to look at it, because you're like, well, dude, we're trying to help you, but obviously not succeeding in that. You've got a leader who is a dictator who is—he's not like—he's not old like Saddam Hussein, so he's a little agile. So we can't really take him out. He's not holed up anywhere, but we're not going to bomb Damascus. We're just not going to do that. So, yeah, all those happening, and Donald Trump.
There's right. That's what I was going to do. It's like there's the thing that occurs to me is that, you know, it's likely. I don't know when and I don't know how, but that something will happen
here.
Either because of copycats or.
But that's just the thing.
Because we're at the beginning of a trend.
In our history from the 90s on, our domestic terrorist attacks, other than 9/11, have happened by Americans. A majority of those Americans have been white males.
Largely Christian.
Right. And it's, you know, and.
But we do have like Orlando and San Bernardino, who again were.
Americans.
But.
American born Syrian or, you know, I don't even know if they were Muslim. I don't even know. Because like maybe they were radical Islam. Because there's a difference.
The investigations show that they had ties.
Ties, right. Donald Trump tweeted out after the first London attack. Pathetic excuse by London Mayor Sadiq Khan, who had to think fast on his no reason to be alarmed statement. Mainstream media is working hard to sell it. Somebody handed the president the statement by Sadiq Khan, highlighted no reason to be alarmed, and the president took that, and that's all he read. He only read the highlighted. I'm assuming this is how it happened. He only read the highlighted part of it, because before that, Sadiq Khan had come out and said, like, not even before that, in the same breath, he said, "We've got police on the ground. We're doing everything we can. There's no reason to be alarmed. Go about your day-to-day business, whatever. Because the one thing that we know about terrorism is that that's what they want. They want complete chaos. So Sadiq Khan is keeping his people calm, like a leader. Everybody stay calm. We got this under control. And Donald Trump's out there being like, why is he not saying people are being alarmed? Not to be alarmed. Could you imagine if the United States would...
I mean, they were alarmed. Chaos. They weren't at like a critical, but they were at, I don't know what the next like step down is.
It'd be
is.
Like orange for here.
Right. And they're.
Theresa May, yeah. Put it at critical level.
I just don't even know what to say about what the president's responded with. I mean, because it just sounds like I'm going to go on a Trump bashing tangent, but there was nothing productive, nothing that said leader, nothing that expressed compassion and offering to, you know, to help in any way. I mean, I'm not quite sure what we could do to help, but I mean, at least the spirit of "we're here for you" was nowhere to be seen in any communication that I saw from him.
Yeah, I'm just scrolling down his Twitter feed right now, I mean, just to see if he's been tweeting a lot lately. I think he's going through
what he did use this incident for
was trouble,
was to say about this ridiculous. The tweet about "we need the courts to give us our rights back." Like, the courts are not a depository of our rights, and the courts give us or withhold our rights when they feel like it. That's not how it works. I just, oh Man.
I hope
people aren't getting civics lessons from his tweets because they would have our government all wrong.
But I wish that somebody in the White House would have given him a civics lesson. Like, Mr. President, let's watch Schoolhouse Rock and let's just do a bill. Let's just talk about how a bill works. And we'll start there.
I think you're getting too complicated. But we need a review on the three branches.
Right, but I'll start there because it's a cartoon, which he responds well to. Then go into, you know, a crash course in AP government. But he would not have passed AP government because he needed to be in regular U.S. government. Oh, so
I barely passed the AP exam, but I did. Me got my too. College credit.
I think I got like a 3.
Me too. Not that impressive.
Sorry. But we're good. We understand the government a little bit better now.
But to say a comment like the courts need to give us our rights back is just so – it's like saying the alphabet needs to give us our words back. That's just not – it doesn't fly.
He also used it again, not only about the rights, but about the travel ban, which he's been talking about, which, like we talked about earlier, he's been blaming the Justice Department for the Trump administration, as of Friday, I believe, sent the Supreme Court their request for review. And so the Supreme Court will have to make a decision on whether or not to take the case or to let the lower court's rulings stand. Something tells me, and another surprise, Neil Gorsuch was having a conversation. I don't know where he was having a conversation, probably something, where he said that sometimes governments can lose with their own courts.
Governments can lose in their own courts. Yes.
Which I'm, like I said, you don't say statements just to say statements. Like
that.
I feel like he was saying to Trump administration allies, don't look to me to save you. I'm going to do everything like we know Neil Gorsuch does on the paper, black and white. I'm going to look at it.
Well, that's what he says, but I don't believe that's true.
He may turn out to be not just a Kennedy, but a Roberts, who has surprised Republicans in some of his decisions. Or Clarence Thomas, as of last week. I only say this one time. Which has surprised people. So, we'll see. The Supreme Court goes back into session soon.
Yes.
They might have some typically June is when some of the things come out. But I don't think we're going to see anything. But speaking of First Amendment, did you get a chance to see the photos from Kathy Griffin? I know we talked briefly about it last week.
I did.
We just initial responses.
Yeah.
But then she had an apology. She went and did a little press conference.
Yes, she and her attorney, Lisa Bloom, who I spoke to about this. She is deeply regretful of the choice to do it. Clearly wasn't thinking straight.
Do you know how it happened? I don't know, who was like, you know what we should do right now? A photo shoot with a severed Donald Trump head.
I'm going to not say it on the air because I'm not sure how much of this is. But I
just as in principle,
heard,
you're like,
when I heard the story of how it came to be, it was kind of like, oh, okay, I could see, kind of. But just somebody wasn't thinking it through all the way.
Right.
Somebody didn't even see it the same way that we all see it. I don't think the excuse part, the justification part, is the focus here. The backlash is the interesting part here. It has gone like over the line,
like CNN pulled her.
Well, you know, CNN, I'm sure in their contract, they have some sort of like morality clause where they can, you know, okay, so fine, if CNN wants to do that. But the level of backlash, the intensity of it, the real like visceral hatred and all that is completely, I mean, I don't even want to say out of line because they have the right to do that.
Right.
But it feels a little hypocritical.
Right.
It wasn't a nice thing to do. It wasn't a cool thing to do. It wasn't a funny thing to do. Same thing when it happened to President Obama.
Right, but the media didn't focus on that kind
right.
of stuff.
And I don't like to bring that up because I don't want to be that person that is always saying, well, what about? So it wasn't.
To be fair, those things we just didn't see those things happen with President Bush either. Like it just was not. But then again, during President Bush, social media wasn't really a thing. Really,
yeah.
Barack Obama's first term. Still trying to figure out social media. Now it's like, here's what it is. Everybody's got a quick reaction to everything.
The photo is kind of gruesome, and to hear that Trump's young son was upset by it.
That's the crazy thing. Barron is not looking at his Twitter.
I think it showed up on TV is the story I heard.
You know, have you ever watched those? I don't know if you watch like political shows, but anytime there's political shows and they have children, like young children on TV, they don't even let them watch the news. So I think Trump should adopt that policy. Don't let Barron watch the news. You know, I think when you've got, from what we understand, Barron has autism. So if you've got a kid who might have autism, I thought that's what I...
There was a whole back and forth between Rosie O'Donnell claiming that he did.
When you've got a kid like that young, you don't...
Unsupervised.
Watching
the
news.
TV with the news.
You just don't put kids in front of the news. Not right now. There's too much going on and they can't quite grasp what's happening in front of
them. And I feel like we're going to get a whole bunch of backlash from parents that are like, you don't understand what it's like to be a parent when you need 30 seconds away from
Is fine. And you have your 30 seconds, but Barron lives in the White House.
Doesn't he still live in New York?
At least they're headed up. I mean, but he lives in a palace in New York, lives in a palace once he gets to the White House this month. So there are other things for him to do other than be watching the news. But the same thing, not only was it swift for Kathy Griffin, but it was very swift for Bill Maher over the weekend as well on Real Time on Friday.
But kind of a different level of intensity.
Well, yeah, for women, it's always very different. The level of intensity is always
very
different.
Well, I think people are more taken aback by a visual than a word.
Than a word. And not everybody's watching Real Time either. But
people are upset, well, how come Kathy Griffin got fired and Bill Maher didn't? Again, the sort of the intensity of the...
Right.
The crime that was committed. Speaking of crime, we'll have to talk about how the First Amendment actually protects.
But then my question is, do you think that – so two things. Kathy Griffin gets fired. Bill Maher doesn't get fired. Obviously,
you've got to listen to – CNN has advertisers.
Right.
HBO does not.
HBO does not, and HBO shows use words that are, bad all the time anyway. So
different
it's not
playing.
Surprising. But do you think that we should – not only us, but journalists and just American liberals hold liberal comedians accountable for things that they say in the same fashion that we would if it was the same stuff that was coming out of a Ted Nugent, a Sarah Palin, a Richard Spencer,
a Republican. It is impossible to define a standard for this type of comedian and
I'm saying across the board.
Entertainer
in general.
People are going to say what they're going to say. You don't like it, don't watch them. If you don't like where they do business, don't do business with that place. But like death threats and all that stuff, now you have crossed First Amendment lines. Because as grotesque, as offensive, as not funny, as those photos were, they are... within her First Amendment right to take and to share. And I thought that this would be a good opportunity to discuss.
What Donald Trump should have had from day one.
Okay, so let's imagine here that we have Donald Trump's watching, right? He's like flipped from Fox News.
We're going to tweet this at him, be like, we had a quick lesson in the First Amendment.
Okay, so the First Amendment's pretty loaded. It's got the freedom of religion one. Anti-establishment of religion, free press, and free speech. But there are a number of exceptions.
Oh.
However, and it says that the government cannot abridge your rights of free speech. So that's an important thing. The government cannot. But an employer can. That's one of the exceptions. If you're in somebody else's house and you say something offensive, they can kick you out. So... we don't, as much as we think that we are allowed to say whatever we want at any time, anywhere, that's actually not true. Because a lot of us spend time at work and your employer, unless your employer is the government, can tell you to not say that.
But does it or in are you protected by the First Amendment if your company is getting government assistance?
That is not clear to me.
I mean, but that's the argument that you have for pro-lifers when it comes to churches getting tax exemptions or Planned Parenthood. You know, there's a whole another side of people who believe that even though the government's giving them government assistance, that they can say whatever they want to. But I believe that if you are getting government money, taxpayer money, and the Constitution says that the government. Like the government either needs to pull that money out because then the government's invested in what you're doing, and you've got to follow the rules of the Constitution. At least that's how I feel about it.
I don't disagree, but I can see where other people are like that's an overreach. Just because the government's money has gone in somewhere doesn't mean that the whole Constitution has gone with it. But
I mean, I understand it, but like that doesn't make any sense.
Well, because people want limited government.
Then pull the government money from that business.
And then. I think that's what they want. Except, you know, then this gets really crazy if you think about it, because there are like lots of subsidies. Like we could talk about like farm subsidies, right? So, you know, farmers get subsidies. It's not like a government. It's not like welfare in the traditional sense that we think about it, where you get to go collect a check,
right?
But when you are subsidized, basically the government is paying you to do your, and so therefore all these farm jobs would technically be government jobs subject to rules of the Constitution. But I don't think it is that way.
Obviously there are, I'm just thinking broadly like.
But it's a great question.
Where that is. So if anybody has an opinion on whether or not you think that companies should be subjected, companies that receive government money should be subjected to
That's like the whole thing that's coming up right now in education, where Betsy DeVos is taking a lot of heat as to whether schools are supposed to stand up for LGBTQ rights.
Right.
And she's like, no. And people are like, well, but these schools are getting government funding, so yes, they should.
Right.
So it isn't real clear, and that's why this.
Yeah, I'd be interested in hearing that argument. Maybe we have our legal expert Roger Wolfenson back on in a few weeks soon. Maybe he can answer that question for us.
All right, so shall we talk about the other exceptions?
Yeah.
Okay, so you cannot be obscene. Obscenity is not protected by
Bill Maher.
Well, that's the question: is what counts as obscene? There's a 3-part definition. Ready? An average person applying contemporary community standards would find that the material appeals to a sexual desire.
Oh.
It's a prurient interest is the word, which basically means
Mike Pence.
Second is that the work depicts or describes in an offensive way sexual conduct, or excretory functions specifically defined by applicable state law.
Okay, so my question to you is, who is defining these exceptions?
This is based on a Supreme Court case.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But
so this right now, if something does not meet these requirements, it's not obscene. And it therefore
who wrote that opinion?
Well, this was a 1973 decision in Miller versus California by the Supreme Court.
Interesting.
And then the last one is, taken as a whole, the material lacks serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value.
So then my question is, if this opinion was done by the courts who can't legislate, but can whose only job is to interpret based on black and white, based on what it is, how do they come up with those exceptions? Like, wouldn't that be a congressional?
Well, no, this is what the Supreme Court does. It has to, you know, when, you know, the 14th Amendment says you cannot violate due process, you can't discriminate. And the court's like, well, there are some forms of discrimination that are justifiable and there are others that aren't. And so we're going to create some standards by which various discriminations are. So like a race discrimination, that's a strict scrutiny. Something like gender, I believe, is intermediate, and some other forms of discrimination.
But Congress, in those examples, have legislated based off of the 14th Amendment, like broke it down. Like, yes, they have not legislated,
yes,
First Amendment, break it down, what's protected, what's not protected. And so that's why that's interesting to me, because I'm like, so why hasn't Congress latched on to defining just like they would civil rights, women's rights?
Yeah, you can let case law stand, and that's just the law of the land.
Surprising.
Yeah, so this is the limit that applies to broadcasting, which is why you can't say bad words on network TV.
Yeah, we try not to here.
But why you can on private platforms.
And that's why we do sometimes.
Right. Lies. Lies are not protected.
Well, listen.
Lies and advertising.
Trump, we gotta
well,
go.
That's that politicians, there's a very clear a caveat.
There's an
to
exception.
The exception for politicians have broad protections.
Interesting.
Against being prosecuted for lying. And citizens too, we can make stuff up about politicians and be okay. Or the government, you can say something false about the government, but generally you can't lie. Like, perjury is a crime, lying under oath, defamation. So I, you know, if I say something or write something about you that is untrue, that is harmful to you, that's a defamation. So that's not okay under the First Amendment. Violence, if you incite violence, immediate threats or something that is likely to get that in a violent reaction in that moment and lead to a fight, that's not protected either. Also, interestingly enough, you don't have a First Amendment right to plot to overthrow the government.
Right, it's treason.
I'm not sure if that defines treason, but this Supreme Court case said that at least with respect to the First Amendment, you're not protected. Right. Students' speech. Students have limited rights of free speech while they're in school. And like I said, in somebody's home or at your business, you don't. And even when you're expressing your political views, there are time, place, and manner rules that are in effect. Zones that you can protest and things like that, which I know about because that's how I got my little self arrested.
Because she's a criminal.
Yes. Basically. I sat in at the Capitol as a form of nonviolent protest. Yeah. So that is your lesson for the day of the First Amendment and the sort of exceptions or the parts of speech that are not protected.
You know what's
not
protected?
What's that?
Leaking to newspapers.
Well, that may not be true if it qualifies under a whistleblower protection.
Interesting, because the FBI just yesterday arrested somebody for leaking to The Intercept,
yeah,
which we'll talk about next, which I want to ask. We've got Representative Maloney on next week, but I want to ask him just about the person who got arrested by the FBI and what can be done. And if
very
that
interesting
is a
name,
says.
Reality Winner.
Reality Lee Winner.
A 25-year-old contractor.
Yeah. But the fact that we have a reality show president and her name is Reality Winner
is
very funny.
Mm-hmm.
You could not write that.
No. At first I thought it was a joke, but it is not.
Right.
And it's also not a joke that she got arrested for supposedly leaking to The Intercept.
Well, she said when they arrested her, according to reports, she said, I printed it, I took it home, and I sent it to The Intercept.
Oh, I did not see that part.
Yeah.
So, allegedly sent to The Intercept.
Right.
The intelligence on Russia's involvement
and not just hacking
specific.
The elections, but hacking the targeting voting machines during the elections.
Right, setting out. I didn't know that there was a difference in phishing and spear phishing,
yeah,
where they're trying to.
But that's phishing.
Yes, where yeah, they're trying
phishing.
To get somebody to click on something and then it releases
yeah.
a virus and does a
yeah.
so some kind of yucky stuff. Now. Would this qualify under whistleblower protection? I don't really think so at first blush, but I would have to take a look at it deeper.
Well, we'll talk about Reality Winner and if things come up over the next couple of days, since he was arrested yesterday, if the DOJ puts out a statement, whatever happens on Thursday. If you don't know, James Comey is doing a testimony. He is in front of the Senate Intelligence Committee on Thursday. So that's going to be very exciting. So,
well, here's the thing. I'm excited, but I'm trying to keep my excitement a
right.
little contained because I know that he's not going to give us the good stuff. He's going to confirm some of the facts that we know, but when he's asked for, like, did Trump try and do this? Or did you feel this way when he did that? All the really sort of meaty stuff, he's probably not going to say anything about. He's probably
unless
just going to stick to the facts. Well, he's going
to
He's not going to embellish.
Asked. He's going to.
Yeah. So I don't, it's like be excited, but not so much. It'll be interesting, but not, I don't know. I saw some people trying to say this is like the closest to the Super Bowl of Washington.
Yeah, I did see,
this is not going to be a Lady Gaga halftime show.
MSNBC said it's going to be the most watched thing since the election, since election night. The most watched political thing since election night.
I mean, I hope
I would think that Sally Yates' testimony was going to be something that people were watching, because that was pretty big when it first happened. But we're going to have like all the information on James Comey and our thoughts on that. All the information on reality winner. and of course, Monday or Tuesday, June 13th, next Tuesday's show, we've got Representative Sean Patrick Maloney. He is the congressman from New York, here to talk about his Adopt a District program, which Judy Chu here in California did an Adopt a District the other day.
Oh.
Yeah. So hopefully, so maybe we'll have Judy Chu on at some point.
She represented my hometown area.
Yeah, I think she went to the 25th or something like that. So check out next week's episode. Chelsea, where can they find you on Twitter?
Yeah, in the meantime, tweet at me, at Chelsea Galicia. Comments, we want to know what you're thinking.
And you can follow me, at Drexel Hurd. Follow us, at ABTV Polyculture. And check out the Trump Report. Tonight's episode, because Chelsea and I are going to head over there. I'll be on guesting.
On AfterBuzz.
On AfterBuzz TV. We'll see you next week.
Yeah, you made it.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio. Instagram me at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in. The views expressed here are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.